Welcome to Embracing the Muse. I'm your host, Sally Jean Fox, the author of Meeting the Muse After Midlife. And I'm on a quest to discover and understand how we can live our richest, most meaningful, and creative lives at any age, and especially as we age. And I'll be interviewing island creatives to discover what they can share with us about the highs and lows, ups and downs, and possibilities of living and sustaining a creative life. I'm really excited today to speak with Espen Anderson, who is our new editor-in-chief of the Vashon Mori Island Beachcomber. And if ever there was a role that's important on the island, it is editor of the Vashon Mori Beachcomber. We've been lucky in past years to have had fantastic editors, and I met with Leslie Brown and Alex Brule and interviewed Liz Shepard. It's quite incredible that somehow we managed to attract such talent from people who have a real understanding of journalism. It's an endangered profession. Mm-hmm. And so I'm looking forward to talking to Espen to find out what drew her into journalism and what the future of journalism looks like from her eyes, both on the island and in the world. So thank you so much for taking time, because I know how busy you are.
Thanks so much for having me, Sally.
Yeah, and so just so people know, because I know this has been part of the bio that you've shared, but you came to the Beachcomber originally as an intern.
I did.
And did so well that you joined the paper as a full-time reporter in 2025, and then went on to become editor. And you've also worked as a crimes and cops reporter for the Daily Herald, and you reported for the LA Times Features Desk. Mm-hmm. And where you focused on multimedia storytelling and feature writer. You are a 2024 graduate of the University of Washington with degrees in journalism and psychology. And so I think I'll leave it like that, because that says you are a wonderfully credentialed journalist, and we're lucky to have you.
Thank you. Yeah.
So tell me, let's go back, because your journalistic career isn't that long, and you began it at a time when journalism has gone through so many changes.
Yeah.
So many changes. So, and the old journalism world that many people were attracted to is no more.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
Yeah, media is under pressure.
Yeah.
And there are not as many places to do real, live, on the ground, talking to people, reporting and journalism the way they were maybe mm-hmm. 30 years ago. So given all that, what drew you to the field?
Yeah, it's funny. Every newsroom that I've walked in has been empty, and everyone is like, this isn't what it's supposed to look like. And I feel like I've had someone say that to me 6 times, which is hilarious. But yeah, no, I know. Everyone's like, why would you be a journalist? This thing's dying. But to that, I kind of feel like, how could I not be a journalist? I feel like more than ever, we need journalists, especially ones that are committed to the original intent of the craft, of upholding democracy, because I feel like a lot of people are calling themselves journalists right now on YouTube and on various social platforms. So to that, I say, you know, what a great time to be a journalist, to kind of be part of that power of the press, I guess.
I love that attitude. And I also love the distinction that you make between somebody just calling themselves a journalist on social media mm-hmm. and what you have learned by studying journalism and knowing something about the ethics of the profession and what really creates a journalist. Because I know Liz Shepard told me that she had to actually, because she came in as a writer mm-hmm. rather than a journalist,
right.
She had to learn on the job what it is that distinguishes a journalist from a writer.
Yeah.
And she did, which
is
great.
Yes, she did. She did a great job.
But I don't think people always understand that distinction.
Yeah.
So could you fill me in a little bit about what it is that makes a journalist as opposed to somebody who's just observing and writing?
Yeah, I mean, there's so many things that I don't even know that I can put into words, but as a journalist, there's always the threat of being sued and legal repercussion. So getting the facts right is important, not just for your community, but also for yourself so that you don't get sued. So there's just like this higher level of accountability in journalism that produces a certain standard of reporting that content creators, I guess, aren't held to. So I think that's the biggest thing that stands out to me is a journalist is supposed to present all the facts in an objective way and let people decide what they want to on the story, like present stories as nuanced and layered, whereas a writer or a content creator can have an opinion, they can present one side, they can leave out certain facts. So it's really an art of trying to do all of that, but then also make it compelling.
Right. That, I mean, talk about creativity, which is the beat of this show. That is huge.
Yeah.
Because you're working to a standard of truth.
Yeah.
That you really, you believe in facts, mm-hmm. you believe in evidence, you believe in finding out what's so, not just believing what's so because it comes to you secondhand.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, you have to create content that's interesting to people,
mm-hmm.
that pulls them into the story, that's nuanced and layered and conveys the complexity.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have this other thing, which is tricky, which is you have to be willing to represent both sides of a story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I know in our island community, that can be pretty challenging. have you experienced that yet?
Honestly, no. I feel like people think of objectivity as just political objectivity.
Mm-hmm.
But no, I mean, there are people with different opinions on most topics on this island. And I feel like I haven't had a hard time finding them, to be honest. I think it's helpful on Vashon because people are so loud and make their opinions heard, which helps me a lot because I'm like, okay, I understand how you feel because you're yelling it at me.
Oh, dear.
but I honestly haven't. I haven't struggled with that.
Oh, that's great because
yeah.
I know sometimes people, and I don't think it's as much with island issues, but it could come up where mm-hmm. it feels like, yes, you have both sides, but both sides are not necessarily equal
mm-hmm.
in a certain, like if,
yeah.
if you were covering, sorry to say, a MAGA event that purported to be the truth mm-hmm. in a matter, and you knew that it wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
So then you're in this place of, do I report that? Do I give them equal time
mm-hmm.
when what they're doing or yeah. saying is not actually true? Am
yeah.
I obliged to do that or that? That whole thing that happened with Stephen Colbert interviewing James
yeah.
Tallarico, where the FCC begins to say, you have to give equal time to all the candidates, even though that was obviously a political decision.
Yeah.
You go, is equal time really true when not everybody is interested in truth?
Yeah, that's so interesting. I think every story demands something different when it comes to objectivity. Sometimes equal time makes sense and is the right thing to do, and sometimes it's not. But even if what someone's saying isn't truth, there's value to reporting what they're saying so that people know that there are people out there that think these things. I don't think that we can be shielded from that either. But that comes with also, I have to write my own sentence saying, you know, either saying why what they said was wrong, but still saying that they said it. There's so much value in that also.
Mm-hmm.
But every story is different and I have to come at every story differently. And if there's a protest and it's not half and half, then why would I report it equally? You know?
Mm-hmm.
So it depends.
Yeah. And if you know something is not factually correct,
mm-hmm.
you know, you want to acknowledge that because it is mm-hmm. a point of view that's important.
Yeah.
But do you give it as much weight?
Right.
As something that's more evidence-based and all. Have you worked in a small town paper before?
No, not like Vashon. I was a reporter in Everett, and that felt small to me because I'm from Seattle.
Yeah.
But no, not like Vashon.
And what's that like? You're both in a very important position, but you're also a member of the community.
Yeah.
So you wear these couple hats here.
Totally. Yeah. I love it for so many reasons. I feel so connected to this community. I feel more connected to our readers than I ever have before. And there's so much value in that. And there's so much value in knowing that this community is reading and cares. It's also a lot of pressure. I've never gotten as much criticism, I guess, than I have in other cities reporting at larger desks. But pressures can be good. I mean, it means that people are paying attention and care and want me to get it right. So it's multifaceted, I would say.
One of the things that Alex said to me, Alex Brill, the former editor, was that it's hard to have time off.
Yeah.
Because, you know, if you go into the Thriftway and people recognize you, you never know when somebody's going to have a breaking story on a Saturday afternoon when you are taking time off. How do you manage that personal boundary?
Yeah, it's really hard. Alex was so good at it. Like, he worked so much. He worked too much. But he was also really good at setting boundaries. I tried to give myself Saturdays off. That doesn't always happen. But I try to set a boundary that there's one day every single week that I'm not working. That it's so rare that that happens. And I think that that's why this profession is so high burnout, that it's not really a possibility to take time for yourself.
Well, not on a paper where the staffing is you know,
people.
Two people.
Yeah, no, I know. But even if I'm clocked out, my brain is going about stories, about everything. So it's really hard, but I try every day to kind of take a step back and be outside.
Good for you.
Yeah.
And is there an activity or something you do in your personal life that helps you clear out and restores you?
Yeah. I think nature is a big one for me. I think walking, as simple as it is the biggest thing. I also think being around, people that aren't journalists. And kind of getting out of this bubble, I guess, and just reminding myself that in my whole life is not news, is huge. I think maybe that's the most important thing, to be with people. But
but I think it's almost like, you know, just as you're working to create great stories, you also have to be diligent about yourself. You know, that is, you know, it's Project Aspen, because we want you to last.
Totally. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think I think it used to be that we could do life without having to think about such things.
Yeah.
But I think increasingly we have to be proactive about how to take care of ourselves, how to self-manage, how to make sure that our nerves don't go crazy.
Yeah.
When stuff is happening, so that we can play the long run and, you know, have good lives. And I never thought of that as important as I think it is right now.
Totally. I think that's so true. I think everyone is starting to pay more attention to work-life balance for so many reasons.
Yeah. But I think with a journalist, it's even harder because you're also on a kind of front line.
Yeah.
And I know I can do things like say, okay, no more news today.
Yeah.
Or, you know, I don't need to listen to that. Or, you know, I can kind of turn the dial for a while.
Right.
You can sometimes, but a lot of times you're in a place where you can't as easily turn off and say, I don't want to hear about this
anymore. No, I can't. It continues. It definitely continues.
What's been the most challenging story you've had to cover so far?
Oh my gosh. Most challenging story. I don't know. This this Epstein story was challenging. Did I right. say that weirdly? Epstein.
Yeah.
That was challenging for a lot of reasons. I did a story of,
and let's just tell people yeah. it was the fact that someone living on the island who's received considerable funding for his AI research
mm-hmm.
received it from Epstein.
Mm-hmm.
I had no idea.
Yeah,
probably most people didn't.
Yeah, and, totally.
And so you're caught in this place of saying, okay, it might be innocent, you know, because not yeah. everybody really understood the full extent of what Epstein was up to.
Mm-hmm.
But just the name.
Yeah.
And just the source of money is cringeworthy.
It is cringeworthy.
So how do you without automatically judging and condemning someone
mm-hmm.
raise the question?
Yeah. It's really hard. I love that story so much because it got to be really nuanced and it got to show a different side of the Epstein files of this person that Epstein surrounded himself with that was a scientist and that, you know, was involved with for a different reason. And that's really interesting to me. But what was so hard about this story is this is a very small town, and reporting anything like that comes with, I don't know, it comes with rumors, it comes with a different weight than if we were in a bigger city.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's hard. But yeah, but from the judgment perspective, I mean, the most important thing to me is at this age in journalism is objectivity. So I feel like I don't struggle too much with making an immediate judgment of someone. I feel like I've trained myself really well to see the facts as they come in and treat them as facts.
That's such a skill, Aspen, because so many... We're kind of in a culture of instant judgment.
For sure.
We want, yeah. you know, to get 5 minutes of facts and then judge somebody. And
yeah.
heck, I can tell you that with some of the stuff that happens from the federal government, it's really mm-hmm. it's really hard to have any objectivity.
It is.
You know, I hear what they do and instantly I'm skeptical.
Totally. Yeah.
I think they've earned that.
Totally.
But here on the island, having the generosity to say, well, this is what we know, but we don't know everything.
Yeah.
And not to yeah. slay people. Because you can ruin careers with innuendo and...
Absolutely. Yeah, and being associated with the name Epstein, I think, comes with consequence. And I'm aware of that. But that's also not a reason not to do the story.
No, the story is really interesting. And it's also,
yeah,
it's one of those places where the small story on Vashon links mm-hmm. to a bigger story. Because I think mm-hmm. as a nation, we don't really know what to do with the fact that Epstein's money supported some good things.
Right.
And there were philanthropists yeah. who took the money and did really good work with it.
Yeah.
So there was that. Like good things coming out of a villainous operation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. The nuance of that story and of journalism in general is why I'm in it, is I want to do more of that nuanced reporting. It's so much easier to paint people as villains and heroes. But I don't think there's any like real work or value in that.
No. And I think it's not what we need in these times.
No.
Because, you know, historically, if you look, there are, it's hard to hold the fact that good things have come out of bad people.
Totally.
And
yeah.
bad things have come out of really good intentioned people.
Yeah.
And it's just plain old hard. It's easier to divide the world up and have the
it's
villains
so
and heroes
easier.
And all.
Yeah. I like to call that a both and.
A both and.
Are true. And
yeah.
two things are so often true. And there are some people that can be classified as heroes and can be classified as villains. But I like to think that that's less than is the population.
Yeah. And it's you hit one of my favorite words of all time, which is both and.
Oh, really?
Because because I really think that when you address life through, it's kind of through the lens of paradox,
uh-huh.
knowing that for most of the time you have some mixture of both and.
Yeah.
And nothing is entirely one way. And sometimes even if you have too much of a, quote, good thing, it kind of turns on itself. That's
yeah.
the paradox of
right.
both and. but it requires a kind of complexity of thinking mm-hmm. that not everybody has. You know?
I see you there. Yeah, I see you there. I think black and white's a lot easier.
Black and white is easier.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm sad to think that, you know, school teachers are heroic. And I've been an educator, so I am totally into education. But I'm dismayed that this thing called critical thinking has languished, you know, and that capacity to really hold opposites, to live with attention, to inquire.
Yeah.
It's kind of an endangered skill for some people.
It is an endangered skill. That's so true. I hadn't thought of it that way. Yeah. I hope that we as a society and world start to realize that critical thinking is in danger.
Yeah.
And I don't know how we get back to it.
Well, I think it's part, I mean, here I am, blah, 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 you know, I'm no expert, but I think it's part of the current evolution that this is just me talking, Sally Fox, no expert, but to be able to say that this era of black and white, you know, demons and angels, and mm-hmm. it no longer fits our world.
Yeah.
And so we not only have to fix a few things that are going radically wrong, but we have to evolve how we think.
Yeah.
And that's in a certain way the harder task. And I sometimes think, you know, as awful as Trump is and the current mm-hmm. leadership in Washington, D.C., it's not just a matter of getting them out. It's a matter of learning to think.
Yeah.
So
learning to think and also learning why so much most of our country voted for him. That's a really key component, I think, to moving forward. Is what did he have to offer all of these people that really resonated with them? And I'm very open to that conversation.
It's an important conversation.
Yeah.
It is a super, I visited a friend who lives in Lorain, Ohio, mm-hmm. outside of Cleveland. And it's one of those old manufacturing communities that's doing not well at all.
Yeah.
And you go downtown and you see the boarded up storefronts and you realize it had a heyday, but that heyday was 100 years ago. and just driving down Main Street, I had this wave of empathy. Like, these people have been left out. This is hard, what they're facing. You know, it's almost like the world went right and they were left.
Yeah.
You know, they were just left where they were. No wonder they're angry. No wonder they would look to a false god for security.
Yeah.
And I just felt, I felt so much empathy. And I have a very decided view about immigration and mm-hmm. not liking what's happening. I hate what's happening. But on the other hand, I also feel like if I was in a place and we didn't have many tax dollars
mm-hmm.
and I was being asked to subsidize a population
mm-hmm.
When I couldn't barely support myself,
yeah,
I would have feelings. And
yes.
I think some compassion for that is worthwhile, you know?
I think it's warranted. I also think it has to happen. I think, you know, Seattle, I always said, was such a bubble, but Vashon's an even tighter bubble.
Yeah.
And putting yourself in other people's shoes in different states and just outside of the city limits of Seattle, I think we need to do that.
Yeah, and it's so true.
I mean, privilege not to.
Yeah, I mean, Vashon is full of so many great people, but we are in a bubble.
Yeah.
And we're in a very privileged, most of us, not everybody, but most are in a very privileged bubble that doesn't understand what living in Lorain, Ohio is like, or probably outside of Black Diamond, Washington, or other places. And and that's one of the downsides of the island, actually.
Yeah, I agree.
You know?
Yeah.
How do you see yourself moving forward? I know you're new into this role, so it may be too soon to have you know, aspirations. But do you have any sense of where you
live? None. not a single one.
Fair enough.
No. So many. I mean, Liz leaving is so hard and so mm-hmm. challenging for the paper. And we're so sad to lose her. But I also think it's going to bring a new era of the Beachcomber, I guess. And that's an era that I'm really excited about, of doing things a little bit differently. And I think part of that is having a little bit more of a presence on social media. I want to do more news, especially. I have lots of aspirations that I probably can't speak about.
Yeah, it's not yet time.
No, but I want the paper to really, it has always punched above its weight, but I want it to continue to do that.
I love that. I love that expression. Yeah. And the thing that's also remarkable on the island is the people who step forward to help.
Yeah.
You know,
I'm
friends with Eric Prine.
Love Eric Prine
and how he has stepped up to help in so many ways.
Yeah.
And then there are probably others, you know, because you go out for coffee and you find out, oh, you were a former journalist or you were a, you were
give you a story. You know, Liz, you know, it's been a week without her, and it's so many reporters on the island and writers have stepped up and have started submitting things, and oh my goodness, it just makes the paper so much better. And I feel so lucky that so many people do this for free because they care about the little old beachcomber.
Yeah. So how do people do that? Do they just contact you and suggest something, or offer to do some kind of help? What does that look like?
I mean, there's a regular stream of freelancers that we work with. Sometimes I ask for specific coverage that we need. Other times they're like, hey, this is happening. Are you interested in this? And I'm like, yeah. Usually interested. I think that's about how that works.
That's fabulous. Well, one of the things that's so great, I mean, about the Beachcomber and even things like the Vashon Movie Theater.
Yeah.
Is that there's a sense that it is our paper.
Yeah.
And our movie theater. I mean, we don't own it and all, but because it's kind of essential to the life of the community.
Yeah.
It's different than some place where it was some people out there doing something and all you had to do was read it if you wanted to, or go to the movie theater at the fiveplex, and you never even think about who was owning it or what was coming in. Somehow it feels like, no, this is part of us, so we need to help if we can, you know?
Totally. Yeah, we're so lucky to have a little paper on this island that reflects the community back.
We're super lucky.
Yeah.
We're super lucky. So is there any question that I should be asking you that you'd like to, you know, talk about to help people know a little bit more about your background or your interests?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think so. I came to Vashon in high school and I fell in love with the island. And that's why I decided to come back as an intern.
Do you have parents here?
No, I commuted.
Really?
Across the boat. I was one of those kids. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So that's how I feel like that has given me, I feel like I've lived here before with that experience of commuting and spending so much time over here.
I didn't know that, but what a super thing, because a lot of times people think they'd like to be on Vashon.
Yeah.
Until they've lived on Vashon.
Yeah.
And then they go, well, oh, I didn't realize that, blah, blah, blah. But you knew what you were coming to.
I did. Yeah, I did. I think this is one of the harder communities to get acquainted with, I would say. I don't know why that is. But I felt like I had that knowledge of how Vashon moves and breathes and what it cares about before I ever had to write an article. And I think that's given me such a backdrop to be able to do this job better. Yeah, I don't think so. I'm really young. I'm 23. I'm still learning how to do this job right. And my work every week is so reflective of all of the mentors that have trained me to do what I do. And I think that's really important to shout out. I have so many amazing people in my life that will look at my stories for free and give me advice. And it produces such a higher level of journalism.
That is fantastic. That is fantastic.
I feel really lucky.
Yeah. Well, we are really lucky to have a real journalist in charge of the paper. And we're lucky to have the paper because, you know, small town papers are so endangered. And the publisher has managed somehow to keep things going despite all the changes in the world. So shout out.
Shout out to Darilyn Anderson. I know. She's been at this paper for decades, and is the backbone of it. Yeah, she's great.
Well, I can't wait to see. I mean, not to put any pressure on you, but I can't wait to see, you know, what little pieces of Aspen begin to show up and as you put your mark on the paper. But in the meantime, just a lot of gratitude for stepping in and doing something that's both essential to our community, but also it's so treasured to have, you know, honest, objective reporting still alive.
Well, thank you. I love being here. It's been great, but we're just getting started.
We're just getting started.
Yeah.
So I'll have you back.
Okay.
I'll have you back in a year to see what you've learned. And in the meantime, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks so much for listening. I look forward to being back soon and bringing you another conversation with an island creative who can show you how it's possible to embrace your muse and live your richest and most creative life. Till then, thanks for joining us, and thanks to Voice of Vashon, 101.9 FM, for hosting this show. I'm your host, Sally Fox, and I look forward to being with you soon.